A Playlist Original.
Welcome to the Pilot Podcast,
where we watch the pilot episodes of TV shows to answer your question, should I watch this?
My name is BJ.
And my name is Me Too.
And this week, we're checking out Ginny and Georgia on Netflix, Kenan on NBC, The Snoopy Show on Apple TV+, and Superman and Lois on the CW.
So stay tuned to the end to find out which Peanuts character BJ would be.
Ooh, I'd want to be... Oh, we have to wait till the end.
Wow, you respected this not being a spoiler.
I caught myself.
You know what we call this? Growth.
Okay, that's a little offensive. How about before we get into the Peanuts characters, we check out a mom and daughter duo on Netflix.
Hey, you're talking about Ginny and Georgia on Netflix. This show centers on Ginny, played by Antonia Gentry. She is a teenager with a free-spirited mom named Georgia, played by Brianna Howie, and a half-brother named Austin, played by Diesel La Toraca. In this first episode, Georgia moves the family from Texas to Wellsbury, Massachusetts, for a chance at the better life that she never had. Beej, how did you feel about this episode?
I liked the show, and I think that this was an interesting modern take on Gilmore Girls, where you had Lorelai, who had Rory at, I believe, 16. Now we have Georgia, who had Ginny at 15. And you're seeing the story of a young mom with a daughter who's at that same age that she got pregnant, and the thought process that goes through that mom's head of how can I prevent my daughter from becoming me, which is a very scary question.
It does feel like an edgy Gilmore Girls, but the point is the same, where this mom is hoping that her daughter doesn't make the same mistakes. And you see that in their dynamic. Georgia is very open with Ginny. She tells her very explicitly about the dangers of trusting people, tells her about the dangers of sex at too young or unprotected sex, and she also applies some pretty tough lessons. We can see in flashbacks that Georgia had to grow up quickly because she was pregnant, but also because she had a pretty rough upbringing. And so she applies these tough lessons for her kids. She says,
"You win more flies with honey, but if you get yourself a bee, sting first."
And them kids are taught to sting first as needed.
They're all stinging in this family.
While the flashbacks are heavy-handed, we see the mistakes that Ginny is making as a teenager being similar to the ones that Georgia made as a teenager. I feel like this show is us as Georgia hoping that Ginny does not end up like Georgia did at 15 and helpless.
Exactly. Georgia sees all the parallels in their life. She's really trying to set Ginny and also Austin on a different path. Many times in the episode, she talks about how she's providing all of the opportunities and resources for her children that she never had. And that's really what drives her as a mom and drives her as, let's be honest, a scam artist.
Everybody has a scam. Game recognized game. We see that in her relationship with the local restaurant owner, Joe, played by Raymond Ablack.
From Degrassi.
He has this scam at his restaurant where it's a farm-to-table restaurant and students work the restaurant for school credit. And so he's not paying anyone anything. You see him and Georgia connect immediately on this cellular scammer level where they see each other for who the other is.
It's like, I get you, Joe. It sounds great to everyone else. Georgia understands exactly how that situation works. And later on in the episode, she uses that against him, which I really like that Georgia is smart and resourceful. A lot of that is because growing up, she had to raise herself from age 15 and was forced to just use whatever she had. Give her lemon, she'll make lemon pie, lemon meringue, lemon jello, which don't you just buy lemon jello, but whatever.
She'll still do it. She'll figure it out. That's the point. She makes a way. Let's talk about this town, though. So Georgia meets her neighbor, Ellen Baker, played by Jennifer Robertson, and Ginny starts a fast friendship with Ellen's daughter, Maxine, played by Sarah Wiseglass, but also has sort of a crush on Max's twin brother, Marcus, played by Felix Mallard.
And Max has a crush on Georgia.
Yes, she does have a crush on her. It's almost like an obsession, too.
It's like the hot new mom. And she's like a cool mom and a young, edgy, very revealing clothing wearing mom.
I think that's what attracts Ellen to Georgia. Georgia sees Marcus and Ellen fighting in the driveway over the fact that Marcus was openly smoking weed in the town. While smoking weed in the town is legal, it reflects poorly on Ellen and her family, and she immediately finds comfort in Georgia because Georgia's non-judgmental.
She's the cool mom. I was worried when Ellen first came over that she would be very judgy, but she quickly opened up to Georgia, which I like. And then similarly, Max is attracted to Ginny because Ginny speaks out to their English teacher, and now Max sees that, okay, there's someone else in this town who is not afraid to voice their opinion, and that makes her the cool new kid she wants to be friends with.
So far, they've been welcomed at every level. Georgia is friends with Joe, the local restaurant owner. She's developing some friendship with the mayor, who's a young, hot bachelor. She now has an ally in Ellen. And then Ginny is friends with Max. She has this weird relationship with Marcus, but she's also potentially dating a boy as well. They're already starting to establish themselves. What do you see next for them?
I'm hopeful that this will continue. Georgia promises that this is going to be a long-term location for the family and that they will run this town. And I think that we're going to see Georgia's involvement with the mayor's office expand. And I think that's unfortunately going to trickle down and affect Ginny and Austin negatively.
As trickle down always does.
But I do think Ginny and Austin are really going to start to see this as a new home and settle in. Hopefully Austin will make more friends. Ginny will continue to expand her friend group and decide what type of relationship she wants.
Do you want to watch them do that? Are you in more episodes of Ginny and Georgia on Netflix?
I am. Very surprised that I like this. Great, charming show. Fun. Good amount of edge. And I would watch this again seriously. How about you?
I don't think I would watch this again seriously. I do think I will watch more episodes, though. It's a perfect Netflix melodrama. If you're interested in a show that you can get lost in on a Sunday afternoon and watch in chunks, then this is the perfect show for you. And I think that's what I'll do over a few Sundays. I'll just watch a few episodes at a time.
Sounds good. So how about we go from melodrama to straight comedy sitcom?
Okay, but this sitcom has a dark twist.
Very dark.
In Kenan on NBC, Kenan Thompson is back in a sitcom with his name on it. The premise is he plays Kenan, a widower and single dad to two girls, and he's learning how to mourn while being there for his family and performing his job of being a peppy morning show host. Helping him is his late wife's dad, Rick, played by Don Johnson, and his brother, Gary, played by Chris Redd.
I was very excited to see Kenan back on a sitcom. I remember him still from his All That days, from the Kenan and Kel show. So it's good to see him do something beyond SNL. I'm still a little confused about the setup and premise. What were your first impressions?
Okay, I think we share the same confusion, and that is that this is a single camera show, so there's no studio audience, but some of the jokes felt like they were for a multicam. So his father-in-law, Rick, played by Don Johnson, I think supposed to be the zany, not traditional grandpa to the kids. A lot of his jokes felt almost like nods to an audience, and I don't know if it's because we're in a Pentatonix that they couldn't do that safely, but he said some jokes and it almost felt like he was throwing it to the audience, but then there was no laugh track, so then it didn't feel as funny. And I think that if there were a laugh track, it would have felt funnier. It's like those YouTube videos of watch Big Bang Theory without the studio audience, and the jokes just don't hit as hard. Like, there are just some things that work better in a multi-camera comedy versus a single camera. I do think it started to find its footing toward the single camera comedy, especially when we got into his workplace. But a lot of the home shenanigans felt like they were made for many people to enjoy together and to tell me when the uproarious laughter was appropriate.
I have to agree that the workplace half of the show definitely was funnier and felt more natural sitcom than the family element. I think that's where the show was shining. Although, as you hinted in the beginning, there is that dark undertone of his late wife that comes up throughout the episode, weighs down any of the comedy. But I did like seeing him on a morning show. What did you think of his coworkers and especially his executive producer, Mika?
I love Kimberly Lewis. She was so good on Single Parents. RIP to that show. I think that she is one of the hidden gems of the show, as well as Fortune Feimster as the sports anchor. They, to me, brought a lot of the comedy. And so for Kimberly, her comedy is more subtle. She has these moments with Keenan where she is asking him to talk about his personal life on TV. He has this awkward moment with his co-anchor where she's pushing him to tell a story that involves his late wife, and he doesn't want to do it. He is still mourning, and he's not ready to talk about Corey, and Mika, as executive producer, has to push him to do that because morning show anchors, that's the point of tuning in. They have coffee, and they tell you about their lives and their stories, and it's supposed to feel like you're having a conversation with your neighbor. And so there was just a lot of humor in that, despite this setup not sounding so funny. I would also add that it was a very smart choice to have Fortune Feimster as Pam Fox, the sports commentator. Fortune is a very funny comedian. She seems to play a very similar role in everything she's in, but that role works. And when I thought the show was getting a little sad, it felt like they injected a joke from her or from Rick, the father-in-law, and I was perked back up again, if you will.
I also like Gary as a way of shifting the tone. He had some funny interactions with Mika because he is his brother's manager, so he's always on set for the morning show. And then seeing him interact with his nieces was really funny when they were looking at his dating profile and helping him find some good matches.
Chris Redd is so good. He is in this movie called Popstar Never Stop Popping. I know I've talked to you about that movie several times and you'll never watch it, but hopefully the listeners...
I've seen it. It's Lonely Island.
Isn't it so good?
Soundtrack is great.
Whatever. It's a really funny movie. Real ones know it's very funny. Chris Redd is arguably one of the best parts of that movie, though I don't think it's made clear enough that he is Keenan's manager and business advisor. I learned that in reading the Wikipedia article about this show, because you know I like to take little notes. I just thought he was like a hanger-on of his brother.
Yeah, he just drove him to work, just had nothing else to do that day.
I thought he was just enjoying the wealth of his brother and just sort of glomming onto that as needed.
And maybe that is what he's doing, but his brother was nice enough to give him a title.
The other character of the show, Corey, played by Nicole Thurman in flashbacks, is Keenan's late wife. I guess she and grief are the other characters of the show, which feels corny to say in the same way that people are like, New York City was the fifth lady on Sex and the City. But it is true that grief is always there. The show is pretty well written, definitely well acted, but it is difficult to mine that for humor. What do you think they can add to the storyline for this to be sustainable? What do you see coming?
Honestly, I just want people to stop asking him about his wife. Keenan's character clearly is not ready to talk about it. It's holding back storylines with his daughters, Aubrey and Birdie, because every time they interact, the conversation switches to their mom. And I'd like to see, what are they doing at school? How does Keenan interact with his daughters? We saw how much effort he put in the beginning to get their outfits picked out for school, pack their lunches, get their backpacks ready. And so I'd like to see more of him as single father with the help of father-in-law / grandfather and uncle. It's an unconventional household, but instead of exploring those dynamics, we just talked about how Keenan doesn't want to talk about Corey.
Okay, so you want 90s sitcom, Danny Tanner. We are not focusing on the fact that Danny is mourning, but rather we are focusing on him and the kids. You want one of those twins to say, you got it, dude. That's the sort of comedy that you're looking for.
I want Full House family dynamics, and then throw in some life lessons by bringing up stories about his wife.
I get that.
Aubrey, you shouldn't have done that. Let me tell you about the time your mom and I got into some shenanigans. How do you think they can move beyond the grief plotline?
I actually don't mind them talking about grief. It's definitely not discussed enough. I just think on a sitcom, it's tough. So I agree with you that there has to be something else. Maybe it's shifting so that it feels more like a Full House. Maybe we'll get to see that, and that is the character's development, that Keenan doesn't shut down or have weird reactions every time his wife's name or image comes up, and we'll see that slowly go down, because it definitely isn't sustainable from this point. But I think the show is self-referential enough to understand that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. It's just the pilot. They can go in many directions.
Do you want to watch more episodes?
I think I'm going to wait until I have confirmation that it moves in a different direction. So for now, I'm not going to watch again, but I'm hoping I can rely on you for that information.
So, for our listeners that love comedy and you're always looking for another sitcom to watch, I wouldn't say Keenan is bad. So, I think I will watch again casually, and I would suggest you do the same. For our listeners who are not so into sitcoms, I don't think that this is the one that will suck you in. Is Keenan great? I don't think so. Not yet. But there is enough humor in the side characters that Chris Redd is bringing and Fortune Feimster and Kimmery Lewis and Don Johnson that there is something there and you will find something to laugh at.
That makes sense. Yeah. This reminds me of when we reviewed Rel.
I loved Rel, though.
I know you did.
I love R.I.P. Rel. The show.
Hopefully Keenan, the show, has a better fate.
But Keenan Thompson, the man, a legend. Take us over to Apple TV with The Snoopy Show.
Sure. So The Snoopy Show is setting up the world's most iconic dog for his own close-up. We're going to be diving into new adventures with the happy-dancing, high-flying, big-dreaming beagle, Snoopy, along with his best friend, Woodstock, and the rest of the Peanuts characters. In this iteration, we have the classic Charlie Brown, voiced by Ethan Pugioto, Snoopy, voiced by Terry McGurran, Rob Tinkler, voicing Woodstock, some of the classic friends such as Lucy, voiced by Isabella Leo, Sally, by Hattie Cragton, and Linus, by Wyatt White. And I think one of the cool parts that we can think about is Apple bought the Peanuts IP, the Peanuts brand. They are the ones now giving us our classic Thanksgiving and Christmas specials. And there's a lot of controversy about how they put those out as well. And so I think it's exciting that they're now making something new and they're focusing on my favorite Peanuts character, Snoopy. What were your first impressions?
The obvious question whenever there's a reboot like this or a remake or a continuation of a story is, did we need it? And I don't know if we needed this because there's so much content about the Peanuts gang, but I'm certainly glad it's here. It is such an obvious choice to center Snoopy, the most interesting member of the Peanuts gang.
You do love dogs.
I love dogs. I love Snoopy. This show was just so sweet. I found myself smiling the entire time that I watched it. A 25-minute smile.
And I think one of the things that adds to that is that it has that classic feel. We were talking about this beforehand that it was an interesting choice to go with classic 2D animation versus a lot of these 3D computer rendered files that we're seeing in animated shows, which there's nothing wrong with that. I believe it's actually cheaper to do a CGI show than to do a 2D show, although this is still probably digitally animated, but it still evokes the classic Peanuts, the classic Snoopy that you can think all the way back to the comic strips for.
It felt so authentic to the original Peanuts show or the Peanuts that I'm familiar with that I paused it a couple times because I was like, oh no, I'm watching the wrong show. And listeners, this is something I've done a couple times. So I thought I was watching some classic iteration of this show. And it was the new thing we've seen with the SpongeBob remake and Fairly Odd Parents. And now with the Rugrats coming remake, it's usually that, like you said, 3D CGI. And so with this 2D, it just felt so sweet and it put you in the mindset of this story.
It's making me think how they brought the Archie comics to CW teen drama. What if they had done that with the Snoopy show, like live action?
No, thank you. And honestly, that begs a question about the Powerpuff Girls live action. I am of mixed feelings with that. So let's talk about the story structure in the Snoopy show. We have three vignettes. The first one is he writes an autobiography that takes the town by storm, but Charlie Brown is not thrilled about it. In the second one, we learn how he meets Woodstock. And in the third one, he's sort of just dancing the day away. How did you feel about them?
I loved all of them. I thought they were all so charming. With the autobiography, we get to see these fictional flashbacks of Snoopy during his different eras. And then we have Charlie Brown commenting on his view of history. So you can debate what really happened. I'd say the Woodstock one was my favorite because second to Snoopy, Woodstock is another favorite character. And it was just really cute how you saw, without either of them saying any words, built this friendship.
You know what? Until you're saying that right now, I didn't think about the fact that there were no words, and I was in it. I very much cared about this friendship. In the first story, what cracked me up is it's the origin story of Snoopy and Charlie, as you said, through his eyes and through Charlie Brown's eyes. And we learn that Charlie Brown is mostly just sad that he's been erased from this epic story. He sees that the dedication is to that round-headed kid who brings me dinner, and that's all he needed to feel acknowledged and appreciated by Snoopy.
That made his life.
I genuinely, I'm not exaggerating, that got like an open mouth cackle out of me to that round-headed kid who brings me dinner. That's so funny.
But it does show that Snoopy does genuinely love Charlie just as much as Charlie loves Snoopy, which is sweet.
We see that in the third vignette. Charlie is feeling really anxious about Show and Smile. Snoopy is the thing that helps him smile and get over his stress about presenting something to the class.
Yeah, and that was a really cute concept, and I think that shows another example where this is a all ages family friendly animated series, because with Show and Smile, it's making all the viewers, no matter what age you are, ask the question, what does make you smile? What in your life makes you happy? And Charlie, probably like a lot of people now during the pandemic, might not remember what are those things that make you smile.
That's true. Wow, Beach, way to bring it all the way around.
You know, I'm looking at the bigger picture.
So do you want to see more of the bigger picture on the Snoopy show on Apple TV?
Well, because I bought an iPhone recently, I have a year of Apple TV Plus.
Ooh, okay.
But I'm going to keep watching casually. I think this is like a quick animated series to fill in when I just have a few moments and I want to smile and laugh. Like I said, it was enjoyable all the way through. You were impressed. I'm still impressed that Snoopy doesn't need to talk for me to enjoy his storylines. And they are actual stories, not just you seeing him do something funny for a moment.
It's a fully realized story arc with rising action, climax, falling action. We get it all.
He literally fell.
Yeah, that's true. I think this is a show that I want to watch again casually. I would also say if there are kids in your life, if I were watching this with my nieces, this is one that I could see us making like a little pillow fort situation and just watching several episodes together. They would laugh at the hijinks, but I would also find it very funny. It's one that the whole family can enjoy, and this would be a really fun marathon with them, I think.
Aw, you should do that.
Now, going from the very sweet and idyllic world of Peanuts, let's go to the dark, glossy CW with Superman and Lois.
We love another Arrowverse show on the CW. This time we're looking at Superman and Lois. We're looking at our famous superhero from the comic books. Classic story of a journalist who's dealing with stress and pressures that come with being a parent. So in this iteration, Superman or Clark Kent, played by Tyler Hoechlin, and Lois Lane, played by Elizabeth Tulloch, are returning to Smallville. They're leaving the big city of Metropolis. And with them, they're bringing twin sons, Jonathan and Jordan, played by Jordan Elsass and Alex Garfin, where they're quickly reunited with Clark Kent's high school sweetheart, Lana Lang, along with her husband and two daughters. As Superman's life is not normal, but super, he has to deal with raising his kids and also a new threat of this mysterious figure who knows a lot about his backstory and all about his superpowers. So Mitu, I know you are not as deep into the Arrowverse as some other TV viewers. How did you feel about this new entry into the CW's superhero universe?
The idea of not being as deep as other viewers. I don't even think I'm as shallow as other viewers. I am unfamiliar with most of these superheroes.
You've seen The Flash and Stargirl.
Oh, Batgirl. I did like Batwoman.
Oh, and Batgirl. I think we've seen the Arrows together as well.
That's true. Okay, so I'm an expert. I liked this. I think that Greg Berlanti and whoever that crew is at CW that keeps adapting these stories for the small screen, they're doing a really good job of explaining the stories to those of us who are not as familiar. Though Superman is a much more legendary hero than the other ones, I would argue But it's also fun for the people who are very familiar with the storylines. So I watched this with my partner, and I could tell that he was enjoying lots of different Easter eggs, whereas I was just understanding things well as they were coming. I think the really effective way that they did that is in the beginning, there was like a 40-second recap of Superman's life. We see him land in the farm, in the field. We see his parents raise him. We see a little bit of him in Smallville. And then we see his origin story as a hero in Metropolis. And it is a quick recap. We don't spend the whole show on it. They're just like, this is everything that's happened. Now let's get into it. And I thought that was great because it helped lay the groundwork for me for his connection to the town. And it also, I think, for someone who likes Superman or is very familiar with the story, I think just helps you remember, like, that's why I fell in love with that in the first place.
Definitely. I think it works on so many levels where it gave you all the backstory you needed to feel comfortable with this world. And for me, it felt short enough that I didn't have to be burdened with going through off like our episode of his origin, which I've seen multiple times already. So I think it was that good mix. And I noticed also his first superhero job was stopping this nuclear reactor, which is going to explode. And they were clever in that they made him use most of his superpowers all at once. So you're quickly aware that he has x-ray vision, heat vision, cold breath, flight, super strength, and super hearing. And he didn't have to explicitly state his powers to anyone.
I didn't even think about that. They did definitely super score all of his powers and it came naturally. It wasn't like, and now I'm going to employ this. He just did it to slow down the nuclear reactor.
Yeah. And now you are comfortable with these are all of his abilities. Okay, let's keep moving. I know what he can do, where he came from.
Super effective. I think the added thing on this show versus in other shows, and we're seeing this more now, is the consequentialism. So as you alluded to in the summary, he is experiencing what a lot of working parents experience, issues with work-life balance and your commitments to, for him, your day job, your job saving the world, and your babies. How did you feel about that?
This was interesting. I had a small bit of awareness that Superman has had children in the comics, but I have never seen any of those storylines. So I was a little thrown off seeing Superman as a dad, especially a dad with teenagers.
One of the teenagers is Jonathan, and he is the son that you would picture for Superman. He's an all-American kid. He is going to start on the football team as a quarterback. As you can tell, I obviously am very familiar with that lifestyle. You know, like, he is the son that you would picture for a superhero. But then we have his twin brother, Jordan, who is very intelligent, but is moody and dark and rebellious against his parents. And he isn't interested in spending time with his family as much. And they say that he also has social anxiety on the show. And so it is odd to see Superman, like, have to appeal to his son. You see him walk into a room with his son and so desperately try to connect with him, and the kid is giving him nothing. We're usually seeing Superman as this infallible hero. And in this case, he's like an awkward dad hoping to strike up a conversation and distract his kid from video games.
Exactly. And another struggle is, over the course of this episode, his sons are starting to learn more and more about his past. He hasn't revealed his alien origins. He hasn't revealed his secret identity. And so you see this very awkward balance where his wife Lois knows exactly where he is, what he's doing, and why he's gone all the time. But then he just has to lie to his kids saying that he's working, he's on a business trip, and really struggle to be a dad, save the world. There's really a strong divide between Superman and Clark Kent. Do you think he can be both well? That's a question that's also brought up in this episode.
No. And he has that conversation with his mom where she says that your responsibility to your family is greater than your responsibility to the world. And Lois Lane also tells him there's always going to be something. So you can't leave every time there's something. And I think there's two ways you can go with this. You can either say that you always want your superhero or superpowered people stories to be in this fantasy world. But I do think it's interesting to see the very human side of this. It makes me think of WandaVision, which I don't want to spoil for anyone, but it includes a lot of consequentialism. What are the consequences of being this superpowered person and causing destruction, both in the more broad world, but then also within your own home and within your own loved ones?
We're really seeing Superman as a real person. Before, he was just this ideal superhero, but also this ideal journalist. And the only real conflict in his life were the villains on the series. But now his conflict is maintaining relationships with his family, and especially his sons, who don't fully understand his lifestyle.
Where do you see the show going next? So we think that they're going to end up living in Smallville now that he has inherited his family's farm. How are the kids going to adjust from Metropolis to Smallville?
I think we're going to get that classic city kids move to a small town storyline when they're just not used to this slower lifestyle where they do things a little different. They have parties in a rock quarry instead of at someone's pool, you know.
Go down to the creek.
So I think there's going to be that tension, maybe some resentment from the twins with their parents for really shifting their life around, bringing them to a new school. And this is something that's hinted at in this episode where Superman and Lois, they're wondering, do either of their children have any of Superman's abilities? And if so, how is that going to change their life? Because it changed Superman's life when he was a kid. So I think those will be the main storylines, adjusting to a new school and wondering, what's it like to have a superhero dad?
You see in this episode that there's a moment where Jonathan and Jordan very physically stick up for each other. So I'm also curious to see the development of their relationship, because you think it's completely antagonistic, but then in the classic way of shows and annoying siblings, while they're the ones who pick on each other, no one else is allowed to. And so when other people try to pick on one of them, they both band together. So I wonder how that push and pull will continue, especially as we consider them navigating Superman and one of them or both of them potentially interacting with some powers.
True. And you know what we didn't talk about, which speaks a lot to this show? The villain. I don't want to give spoilers on the name, but there is a villain with a robot suit that allows the villain to go head to head with Superman. And clearly, we both were more interested in Superman's family life than his superhero duties.
I completely forgot about that villain until you brought it up. So hopefully we'll get a little more Smallville and a little less of that.
Oh, so you want even less of the villain?
I guess the amount of villain we got was fine. So maybe I just don't want more of it, because clearly the more interesting story is them in this town.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So do you want to watch more episodes?
I'm surprised to say, I think I will watch this again casually. I think CW is sucking me back into the Arrowverse. I had taken a break from a lot of the series, but I'm going to watch a few more episodes, see where this goes. How do you feel?
I think that because my partner was into it, I will watch more episodes whether I want to or not. But for people who are not superhero hive, or you're not as familiar with superheroes like me, this show would be fun for you. They just do a really great job at CW of adapting these storylines so that you can catch up easily and not feel confused. But then for the people like BJ who are superhero hive, you enjoy it too. They just know what they're doing over there.
They have a formula and it works.
I do just want to take a second to say this was a great batch of shows that we experienced this week.
It was a solid week. We don't always have solid weeks.
No, we don't. So, BJ, tell people where they can find more episodes of the Pilot Podcast, both solid weeks and not.
You can find out our opinion on all the weeks that we review shows by heading to our website at thepilotpodcast.com. And don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
You can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at The Pilot Pod, and you can send thoughts, feelings, show recommendations, because every other week we have a show recommended by you, our listeners, to askthepilotpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Bye.